Okay, this is an exciting concept. This year we're continuing the series of Inyanei Choshen Mishpat, monetary law. This topic comes from a sugya in Bava Kamma, and it's actually a pasuk in last week's parsha, Parshas Mishpatim. It's a concept referred to as Eish Mishum Chitzav. So the pasuk says like this. The pasuk in last week's parsha, Ki Seitzei Eish. So the pasuk describes a scenario where a person was lighting a fire legally in his own backyard, let's say. Let's say he was making a barbecue. He was legally and appropriately lighting a fire in his own backyard. And then, ki seitzei eish u'matza kaitzim. The fire went out. It found kaitzim. It found thorns. The Nechal Gadish, and it went and it burnt somebody's haystack down. So imagine if the fire, you were allowed to light the fire in your own backyard. You weren't an arsonist. You were lighting the fire in your own backyard and you were barbecuing or whatever it was. And then you went into your house for a moment and a wind came, a common wind came. The fire went, it found kaitzim, it found thorns or thickets, and the fire was able to travel into someone else's backyard, the Nechal Gadish, and it burnt the other person, it burnt your neighbor's haystack down. Oy hakama, or perhaps it burnt his grain that was growing, his crops that were growing. Oy hasadeh, or perhaps it scorched your neighbor's earth and it ruined the soil. He's gonna have to refertilize the soil. A damage was caused. So the pasuk decrees, Shalem yishalem hamaver es ha-be'er. So the person who lit the fire originally in his own backyard, again, he was allowed to light the fire, but because there was a degree of negligence that the fire went off, he left the fire unattended, or some other degree of negligence, and the fire went off and destroyed and damaged something in your friend's backyard. So the pasuk says, Shalim yishalim hamavres ha-be'er. The pasuk says you have to pay. Now, the Gemara in Bava Kamma on Daf Chaf Beis Omer Aleph says the following. Itmar, Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Rabbi Yochanan says, Eishoi, his fire. So even though the case of the Torah was his fire, but the example of his fire becomes now a concept. The fact that you're liable for your fire that goes off on its own and burns becomes a concept. It becomes a precedent in Hilchos Choshen Mishpat. So the Gemara wants to know, why am I liable for the damage that my fire caused? After all, I didn't go and burn down your haystack. I legally lit a fire in my own backyard, and the fire went on its own and destroyed something in your backyard. So perhaps we should consider this a grumma. Perhaps we should consider this an indirect damage. We know that there's a certain point where you can no longer hold me responsible for the damage. What do they call that? A Lou Goldberg. What's that machine called where you do one thing and then it causes so many indirect things and it eventually
Yeah, sorry, Rube
a
Goldberg.
Rube Goldberg. So it eventually it goes and destroys something somewhere else, or it causes something to happen somewhere else. There's going to be a point where you can no longer attribute the effect to what I did all the way back here. Where do you draw the line? So the Gemara wants to know, why am I liable for the fire that I lit in my own backyard and it goes and travels and causes damage in your backyard? After all, I'm only a grumma. It was only an indirect cause. I didn't go and light a fire in your backyard with my own two hands. It's a grumma. So there's actually a dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish how to understand this exceptional halacha that I'm liable for my eish, for my fire, even though seemingly one could argue that it's a grumma, that it's only an indirect cause. Rabbi Yochanan says, Eish mishum chitzav. Rabbi Yochanan says, what the Torah is teaching us here is that although we might consider it indirect, on the contrary, it's considered your chetz. It's as if you shot an arrow. Just like if you would imagine if a person shoots an arrow, he shoots some kind of projectile. Imagine if a person pulls the trigger on a gun, or he takes a machine gun and he goes through a few rounds of ammunition. Would anybody buy the argument that he's only a grumma because he only indirectly caused the damage because he just pulled the trigger over here? Nobody would say that. It's his chetz. It's attributed to him because it's his koyach. It's his energy that's projecting the object through the air. So Rabbi Yochanan says an amazing idea, that the fire that is traveling on its own, perhaps it's traveling because of the wind. The fire that's traveling on its own, the Torah must be considering this as if it's my chetz, as if it's my arrow, as if it's my projectile. In other words, the Torah is being mechadish. The Torah is creating a novel concept that if you use the laws of nature, if you employ the laws of nature, everyone knows, if I light a fire over here, it's going to travel over there. If I employ the laws of nature, that's attributed to me, and it's as if it's my projectile. That's what Rabbi Yochanan says. Reish Lakish says, he argues, there's no such concept. Eish mishum mimono, that the fire that's going off on its own is as if it's my animal that I'm responsible to watch. If my dog goes into your backyard and devours, so I'm responsible because I have to watch my dog. I have to keep my dog chained. I have to keep my cow chained. I can't allow my animal to go and wreak havoc in your backyard. So Reish Lakish considers the fire to be an indirect damage. We're not holding the owner of the fire, the lighter of the fire, responsible because it's his chetz, it's his projectile, it's his direct action. We're holding him responsible in a secondary way because his animal, his creation, his object, we should say, went off and damaged something else. So there's a fundamental argument here between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. When a person, we know the Torah says in last week's parasha that if my fire goes off and damages, I'm liable. But the question is, what's the nature of this liability? It's indirect. Rabbi Yochanan says the Torah must be mechadish. The Torah is teaching us a novel concept that it's directly attributed to me. The fact that I lit the fire and left the fire unattended, the damage that the fire causes is directly attributed to me. It's my action. It's as if I shot an arrow. It's my chetz, because I'm employing the laws of nature. It's a tremendous concept. It's a novel concept. Reish Lakish holds, no, it's indirect. It's not attributed to you. It's not your damage. It's as if it's your animal that went off. The fire that you created is your property. It's you're responsible for it. So therefore, there's a secondary liability for the damage that your fire causes. My binayu, what's the difference? What difference does it make if you consider the fire to be the action of the man, or you consider the fire to be a secondary liability because the fire is going off on its own and destroying? So the Gemara says the difference is lechayvoy ba'arba dvarim. So lechayvoy ba'arba dvarim. So we had in last week's parasha that for assault and battery, if one person injures another person, besides paying for damages, there are other payments that you can sue for. You can pay for doctor bills. You have to pay for any embarrassment that you caused the person. The person is walking around with a black and blue mark. He's walking around with a bandage. You have to pay for any distress or embarrassment the person incurs. You have to pay for the pain. There are ways of assessing the pain. You have to pay for the pain. You also have to pay for the doctor bills. You have to pay for the shevis, the unemployment, if the person was out of work now because of the injury. So there are many payments that a person has to pay when it's adam hamazik, when the person did the damage. But if my animal goes off and does damage, I'm not liable for those extra payments. I only pay the core damage, the nezik. I only pay the damage. So that's a practical difference between how Rabbi Yochanan looks at the fire and how Reish Lakish looks at the fire. Everybody agrees that the fire seemingly would be indirect. It would be an indirect damage. Rabbi Yochanan says that it must be, the Torah is teaching us, that we consider it to be a direct damage. We attribute it directly to the person as if he shot an arrow, a projectile, because if a person employs the laws of nature, that's considered his action. That's Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish says, no, let's look at it like it's an indirect damage. You're simply responsible for the damage that the fire causes, not less than if it would be your animal. The difference is, if you consider it adam hamazik, do we consider it as if the person caused damage, or do we look at it as if his property caused damage? A practical difference would be the extra payments that you can sue for when it comes to assault and battery, but you cannot sue for those damages when it comes to just mamon hamazik. We paskin like Rabbi Yochanan, by the way. We paskin that when a person lights a fire, it's considered his chetz. It's considered to be his arrow. And he would have the full liability of Adam Hamazik, as if the person went ahead and punched you in the nose. If I light a fire and the fire goes into your backyard and damages you or damages your property, for all intents and purposes, it's as if I walked over to you and punched you in the nose, because it's Adam Hamazik. Now, the Gemara actually decides in favor of Rabbi Yochanan. Omar Rava, item Gimel, Rava says, Kro umastisa nasayei alei l'Rabbi Yochanan. Not only does the Pasuk supports Rabbi Yochanan, if we take a closer look at the Pasuk that we cited above, the Pasuk supports Rabbi Yochanan, and then there's a Mishnah that cites Rabbi Yochanan. How does the Pasuk support Rabbi Yochanan? Because if we have to take a careful look at the Pasuk, Ki seitzei esh, the fire went off. So the Gemara says, Teitzei, when the word says Teitzei, when the Pasuk uses the expression that the fire went off, Me'atzma, the fire went off on its own. That's the clear story in the Torah, that the fire went off on its own. Shalem yishalem hamavir es habeir. The Pasuk says, the one who lit the fire has to pay. Why is the Pasuk reiterating that I lit the fire? Everyone knows that I lit the fire. So the Gemara is actually making a drash. The Gemara is making a drasha that when it says I lit the fire, it's not referring to the initial act of having lit the barbecue back there in my backyard. It's referring to the damage that the fire caused. The Pasuk is considering it as if I lit the fire by you when it damaged your backyard. So although the fire went off on its own, the Pasuk, because of the redundancy, Hamaver es habeira, the one who lit the fire, it doesn't simply mean I'm the one who lit the fire back there in my backyard. It means it's as if the Torah treats it as if I lit the fire in the place where it caused the damage. Shmami no, we see from here that the fire is considered my arrow. And Rashi explains, Tala hakasav habeira bebal ha'esh, the Pasuk attributes the fire, the damage that the fire causes, to the owner of the fire, the one who created the fire. Ki'ilu hiv'iru ba'atzmo, as if he lit the fire himself, as if he caused the damage himself. That is the parsha, that is what the Torah is teaching us when a person lit a fire. I lit the fire back there, the fire went off on its own, it caused damage. It's not an indirect damage, it's not a grumma, it's not even considered like my property went off and damaged, like my animal went off and damaged. It's directly attributed to me. Why is that? Because of a new concept, the concept of Eish. The concept of Eish means that if you employ the laws of nature, you know that if you let the fire unattended, a wind might cause the fire to go further. If you employ the laws of nature, that's considered to be your action. That's what we see from here. Now, the Gemara continues in item Hay that not only is the actual prototype of the fire, a literal fire, subject to this halacha, but a tolda of Eish, just like when it comes to Shabbos, you have the avos, you have the primary category, and then you have all the derivatives of that category. There's a tolda of Eish. There are things that are analogous to fire. There are things that are derivatives of fire. Again, I just want to emphasize that the case in the Torah when the fire goes off and causes damage, it's not just a story. The Torah is introducing to us a halachic concept that when a person employs the laws of nature, he lit a fire and he allowed the wind to carry the fire somewhere else and cause damage, even though he didn't inject energy, he didn't project the object. It's not his literal projectile, but the Torah considers it as if he shot an arrow or as if he pulled the trigger and shot off a bullet. Eish mishum chitza. Now, this doesn't just apply to an ordinary fire. This applies to a tolda of the Eish. The Gemara in Bava Kama says on Gimel Lamed Beis, told us the Eish mind. You know, what are some examples of things that we can derive from this brand new concept of Eish, and that's considered analogous to Eish? So the Gemara says, we learn this in yeshivas, you can ask the yeshiva bachar, everyone knows, Avnoi sakinoi umaso. If a person put a stone on the roof, a person put a knife on the roof, or a person put a package on the roof, shehenichoi b'rosh gagoi, v'noflu b'ruach mitzuya, and a common wind was able to blow the object off the roof, the heziko, and it causes damage, hainu eish. The Gemara says that essentially is a fire. And the Gemara explains, it's not a fire, it's not a literal fire, but it's the same concept of the fire. Maishna eish tekoyach achar v'uraba, because take a look, the Torah says that when you light a fire and the wind causes the fire to travel and cause damage, there's a koach acher mu'urabo. It's not literally my koach, It's not my energy that's pushing the object. It's the wind that's pushing the object. Nevertheless, the Torah holds me responsible. See, here also it's the same thing. It's something you created. It's something you're obligated to watch out for. So the fire, the stone, or the knife, or the package, the package that's on my roof, it belongs to me. It's something that I'm responsible for. Even though the wind blew it off the roof, so it's an amazing thing. I could have put something on the roof a week ago, and I left it up there. I forgot. I didn't pay attention that there's going to be a storm coming. I didn't pay attention that there's a windy day. I went back home. The object was sitting on the roof for the past week. And then a week later, the wind blows the package off the roof. I'm responsible as if I pulled the trigger, because it's a derivative of H. Just like when it comes to fire, you lit a fire. You left the fire unattended. A wind blew the fire and caused damage. We hold the lighter of the fire responsible as if he's the one who literally caused the damage. It's his chetz. So it doesn't give us any span of time. I can put something up on the roof a year ago, and I forgot about it. I left it there. And a common wind blows the object off the roof and injures somebody. It's as if I went and punched the person in the nose. Eishu mishum chitzav. It's attributed to me, and he can sue me for nezek, Ripoy, doctor bills, Sheves, unemployment, the Nezik, the Tsar, and the Boishes, not the Boishes, but the Sheves, the Ripoy, and the Nezik, and the Tsar. All the primary four payments. Boishes, you don't have to pay. You don't have to pay for the embarrassment, actually, because embarrassment is only if you actually had Kavanah. But you would have to pay for the pain, you'd have to pay for the doctor bills, you'd have to pay for the unemployment, and you'd have to pay for the damages. You actually wouldn't have to pay for Boishes because you didn't have Kavanah. It wasn't deliberate. But the Torah considers it like it's my damage. That's the Toldah of Eish. This is an amazing concept. If a person puts something in the path of a wind, he is directly responsible for the damage that causes. There's another Gemara in Bava Kamma, in Perek HaKlinis, in the sixth Perek, on Daf Nun Vav Amar Aleph. The Gemara takes this concept a step further. The Gemara says, what if I didn't even light the fire? Until now, we were talking about a case where I put the projectile on the roof, where I lit a fire, where I was responsible, sort of, for the creation of the projectile. It wasn't my energy that shot it off, it was the wind. But I was responsible, at least, for putting the projectile there. The Gemara takes it a step further. This is item Vav on the notes. If a person places somebody else's object in the path of a fire, so I didn't even light the fire, I didn't even put the package on the roof, but I put something in the path of the fire. Imagine if you can mathematically calculate that if a wind would blow, so that package would fly off the roof and land in such and such a spot. And you deliberately put something in that spot, hoping that the thing would land on it. I totally had nothing to do with the projectile. It was a total grumma. It's a total indirect damage. But the Gemara takes it a step further. If you put something in the path of the fire, it's directly attributed to you. The Gemara says, if a common wind could cause it to blow, and you put something in the path of the fire, you will be liable under Eish. And Tosfos says there on the spot, in Andaf Nun Vav and Bava Kamma, there's no difference between Makariv Dover Eitzel HaEish. There's no difference if you put something in the path of the fire, or ben mekarev ho'esh etzel hadavar, or whether you put the fire in the path of the object. So Tosfos makes this observation that the Gemara is carrying the concept of esh a step further. It's extending it a step further. Not only are you liable for the esh where you at least created the fire, or you created the hazard by putting the object on the roof, but you're even liable if you put something in the path of the fire or in the path of the projectile. The whole geschäft, the whole scenario becomes attributed to you because you're the one who put something in the path of the fire. So imagine...
people. You had a person who lit the fire, and now he's let it gotten out of control.
Excellent.
Then you have somebody else puts in. So both have that. There's a shutzfitz there.
Excellent.
Both people now liable for the...
That's actually a sugi in Bava Kamma, yeah. one person lit the fire and then another person put fuel into the fire. But in this case of putting something in, so there are two cases, Jay. One case could be where you lit the fire and then I put more fuel in the fire. So then there's actually a machlokes Rashi and Tosfos if we share the if the fire would have been able to go anyway, maybe the one who lit the fire is chayav. In this case that I'm discussing this moment, if you lit the fire and I put something in the path of the fire, then I will be totally liable because as far as your lighting is concerned, it wouldn't have caused the damage. It was my putting it in the path of the fire that causes the damage. Just to bring this case to home, imagine if like a person has an air conditioning unit that he sticks into the window on an apartment building window, a high up window, and he was an amateur. He didn't screw or he didn't attach the air conditioner properly to the window, and he knows that there's a chance it might fall and a wind might blow or something might occur to knock the air conditioner out of the window and it'll fall four stories down. So a week later, lo and behold, the air conditioner goes smashing to the ground. And chas v'shalom, I don't want to say a case where somebody got hurt, but imagine if it smashed somebody's car or something of that nature. So I will be liable for that air conditioner as Adam Hamazik, as if I went and smashed the car. And if you deliberately put somebody's car in the path of that air conditioner, you looked up and saw that there's a rickety air conditioner up there, and you put somebody's car in the path, then you will be liable when my air conditioner falls. It's an amazing thing that you can take over if you, basically the concept according to Rabbi Yochanan, if you're employing the laws of nature, the laws of the wind and the laws of the gravity, and you're employing these physical phenomena, you become the bailin. The entire damage is attributed to you. That's what Tosfos says. That's what the Gemara says. Now Tosfos in Sanhedrin carries this over. Until now, we were talking about monetary law. We were talking about causing damage. We were talking about assault and battery. We're talking about payments. We're talking about the four lawsuits, Nezek, Tsar, Ripui, and Sheves. We're talking about the different payments. We're talking about paying for damage. We're talking about monetary law. Tosfos in Sanhedrin, on Daf Ayin Zayin, extends this to Ritzicha, to murder. So now we're going to extend this to murder. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin and of Ayin Zayin. Omar Rava says the following. These are, nobody is condoning this obviously, and nobody's saying you're allowed to do it. We're discussing, is it a grumma? Is it considered indirect? Or is it considered direct? That's the discussion. Obviously, nobody's permitting indirectly causing somebody's death. We're discussing, are you liable? Can you be held liable in a court of law, right? You might have indirectly caused something, but can you be held responsible in a court of law for that direct cause? So the Gemara says the following. Imagine if somebody ties somebody up. It says here, you tied somebody up on a hot day, umes, and the person died, or betzina umes, or you tied him up in a cold day. So you have, I remember when I was living in Ottawa, so you would have these frostbite warnings. It's so cold, you can't be outside for more than 5 minutes at a time or 10 minutes at a time. Imagine if it's frostbite conditions and you tie somebody up in the cold, not allowing him to run and find shelter. So umeis chayv, that's considered an act of murder. This is considered mitzamsem. Although I'm not the one who put him there, but it's like a person's under the water and you're holding him under the water, not allowing him to come out. That's considered an act of murder. We learn it from a pasuk. It's referred to as mitzamsem. You're holding the person in the dangerous spot. Whether you're holding him in a fire, holding him in the sun, the heat, he's going to dehydrate. You're holding him in the water. However, soif cham alavoy, soif tzin alavoy, pater. However, if I tie the person up on the front lawn, in the middle of the night, the sun is not there yet, and then the sun is going to rise, and the person is going to be out in the sun all day because I tied him up the night before. Before the sun rose, I tied him up. The Gemara says, I'm pater, I'm exempt. Why am I exempt? Because mitzamtzein, this halacha of keeping someone in a dangerous spot is only if the danger was present at the time. But if the sun was not there yet, the sun still had to rise over the horizon, I'm not liable for Ritzicha, not because it's permitted, obviously. It's because it's a grumma. It's considered indirect. It's beyond the reach of a human court. Hashem will get the guy. Hashem will be after him. He'll get his punishment in due time. But the court, the Bezdin Shalmata, the human court, it's out of the reach of the human court. It's a grum. So let's get the case. Imagine if I tie somebody up on the front lawn in the middle of the night. It's perfectly, it's pleasant. There's no sun, there's no heat, there's no cold. There's no issue here of dehydration. It's the middle of the night. The sun rises, and now you have these scalding temperatures, and the person is stuck outside because I tied him up, and he dies out of dehydration. I'm not responsible, although it's obviously forbidden to do this, and it's a grumma, but I wouldn't be responsible for this because it's only a grumma, it's indirect. See, here's the question. Tosfos asks the question, you should be liable for ritzicha because of eish. The sun should be considered your fire, right? Just like we say that if you take something and put it into the path of the fire, the halacha is that you're liable, and we attribute the eish to you. So this is incredible. Tosfos is asking, we should consider the entire sun as if it's your eish, because you're the one who put the nizik, you're the one who put the object or the person or whatever it was in the path of the fire. And when the sun rises, it should be considered my eish, it should be considered my action. So it's true that I didn't tie you up while the danger was present. The danger didn't occur until later. But it should be my eish, because I put you in the path of the sun. I should be liable for that. Tosfos asks that question. There's another incredible Gemara that says the following. This is item Ches. Another incredible Gemara. We know the halacha that if an animal goes off and kills somebody on its own, we had it in last week's parsha. So the halacha is that the animal is killed. That's how it is in that's how it is in civil law. That's how it is nowadays as well. If you ever have a case where the animal in the zoo, if the tiger kills the zookeeper, they would terminate the tiger. They would eliminate the tiger. We don't want to have an animal around that has blood on its hands. If an animal goes and kills a human being, the animal is stoned. That's the halacha. Now, says the Gemara, an amazing halacha. Rabbi Yehuda says, if I take a poisonous snake, if I take a rattlesnake, or I take a king cobra, I take a poisonous snake, and I put your hand into the mouth, into the fangs of the snake, says Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha is that the snake is exempt. We don't kill the snake. Although the halacha is if an animal kills someone, we destroy the animal. We do not kill the snake. And the man, the person who put the snake to your arm, is liable as a rotzeach. According to the chachamim, the halacha is that the snake is put to death, but the man who put the snake on you is exempt. So what in the world is the argument? The Gemara says an amazing thing. The Gemara is questioning here. I guess the Gemara never did a study to figure it out, to get scientifically. The Gemara is questioning, where is the poison of the snake? Is the poison of the snake in the fangs? Are the fangs like tubes, and the poison is in the tube? And when I put the teeth, the fangs of the snake on your arm, the poison goes out on its own because the poison was sitting there. So then you would consider me the reitzeach, and the snake is innocent because the snake didn't do anything. The poison was just sitting there in the tooth. And when I pierce the skin with the tooth, the poison goes in by itself. So the snake is exempt and I would be liable. Or do you say, and I think that this is the common understanding how it works, the poison is created by the glands of the snake. And when the snake bites, it somehow ejects or it excretes the poison, it secretes the poison or excretes the poison into it. The snake itself is the one who's pumping the poison into its victim. So even though I'm the one who put the snake's fangs to your arm, I'm not the one who caused the death. It was the snake that pumped the poison, injected the poison into the victim. So according to the Chachamim, the snake is put to death, but the man is exempt. Why? Because it's a grumma. So for example, if I would sick a dog on you, so I would be exempt. It would be a grumma. If I put the poisonous snake to your arm, so believe it or not, I'm exempt because it's a grumma. It wasn't me who did it. It was the snake who did it, because the snake has to inject the poison. Rabbi Yehuda says that the snake is completely innocent. It's the man who's responsible, because the poison is sitting in the teeth of the snake already from before. But according to the Chachamim, the snake has to inject the poison, so it's considered it's the snake's action. We paskin like the Chachamim. If I put a poisonous snake to your arm, and the snake injects the poison into your arm, the halacha is that I'm exempt because it's indirect, but the snake is put to death because the snake is the one that injected the poison. Asks the Tosfos the obvious question. The venom of the snake should be like an eish. It should be considered like, it's true that it's an indirect damage, but we already said if you employ the laws of nature, you're responsible, because if you would put a stone on top of the roof and the wind would blow the stone off the roof, it would be attributed to me. So it's true that the snake is the one who injected the poison, but I'm the one who set it up. I put you in the path of the fire, so that should be considered attributed to me by virtue of this new concept of Eish. That's Tosfos' Kasha. And Tosfos gives a teretz that we're forced to say, because the venom was not extant, it was considered within the body of the snake, so it's too far off, it's considered a grumma. Eish is only if you created the fire, or if you put the stone on the roof, or I put something in the path of the existing fire. But in this case, Tosfos says we're forced to say, basically Tosfos is struggling, we're forced to say that I'm not liable for the venom, because at the time that I put the venom, that I put the fangs on the victim, the venom was not extant yet, because the snake still has to excrete it and the glands have to produce the venom. So therefore it's not considered, it's too out of the realm, it's considered a grub. What do we see from all of this? We see from all of this that if not for these distinctions that Tosfos is making, Tosfos is extending the concept of Eish not only to monetary law, but even to murder. It would be considered an act of Ritzicha. Tosfos consistently asks that whenever I indirectly cause the Misa, Tosfos says you always have to factor in why isn't it considered Eish. So we see from Tosfos that Tosfos is extending the concept of Eish, which was only introduced in terms of monetary law, but Tosfos is extending it over to Ritzicha, to the laws of murder and Chiyuv Misa. Now, there's another example of this. The Gemara says in Chulin, this is item tests, if a person drops a knife and the knife miraculously shechts an animal properly, you know, it might be unbelievable. The Gemara talks about where you have these archers where they shoot an arrow and they're able to shecht the bird in mid-flight. They're so good, they're sharpshooters. They're so good at shechting and shooting arrows that they're able to shoot an arrow and shecht the bird in mid-flight. So in this case, the fellow dropped the knife and the knife shechted the animal properly. You know, maybe the Chachamim were amazed, maybe they examined it over and over and over again. They can't find anything wrong with the Shechita. He dropped the knife and the animal apparently was shechted properly, believe it or not. So the Gemara says, nevertheless, the Shechita is possible. Why is the Shechita puzzle? Because you only drop the knife. The knife fell by itself. It fell because of gravity. Shechita requires koyach gavra. Shechita requires that there was human input in the Shechita. It has to have occurred through the energy of the person. The normal way to shecht is to hold the knife tightly and to shecht. Shechting a bird, shechting a cow. We could shoot the arrow and we can shecht the bird in mid-flight, but it's flying through the air because it's my koyach. But if you drop the knife, dropping the knife, there's no koyach gavra. There's no human input. There's no energy in the dropping of the knife. The knife is not flying through the kinetic energy of the person, the input of the person. There's no koyach gavra, and therefore it's not considered a shechita. Tosfos asks the amazing question, but you should be liable for eish. What if I put the stone on top of the roof? And a wind blows the stone off the roof. That's considered eish mishum chitza. The Torah is mechadish that's considered attributed to my action as if I shot an arrow. So just like I'm liable for monetary law, and I have to pay the four payments, I have to pay the nezek, and I have to pay the ripoy, and the sheves, and the tsar, I have to pay payments that I'm only liable to pay if it's considered that I damaged on myself with my own koyach. The Torah considers the Eish to be Koyach Gavra. It's considered to be my action. So asks Tosfos, why can't I do a shechita like that? Why can't I put a knife on top of the roof, wait till the wind blows the knife off the roof, and if the knife shechs the animal properly, it'll be attributed to me, especially if I put the animal in the path of the knife and I synchronized it exactly that it should shech properly, I'm holding the animal. Why can't you consider the knife my koach? Because eish mishum chitzav, because it's considered to be my chetz. It's considered to be my arrow. So Tosfos entertains, maybe shechita is different, but Tosfos says, how can shechita be different than ritzicha? If you would be liable for murder, certainly, if it's good enough for murder, it should be good enough for a shechita. Tosfos answers, in hachinami, all of this would be true. It would be a shechita. The Gemara in Cholin is going according to the opinion of Reish Lakish, that the fire is only considered my cow. It's considered my mummon. Imagine if I would put my knife in the mouth of my dog, and the dog would go off and shech the animal. That certainly wouldn't be good, because that's just my dog. There's certainly not a maisa adam there. So all the Gemaras that say that if you put a knife on the roof and it falls off and shechs, or if you drop the knife, it's not a good shechita, that's because that Gemara is going according to the rejected opinion that eish mishum mimono, because the fire is indirect. The fire is not attributed to you. But according to how we paskin, we already said before, the pasuk declares that when the fire goes off and burns, it's as if you burnt, it's as if you caused the damage. It would also be a valid shechita. So Tosfos is amazing. The Gemara is talking about hezek. It's talking about monetary law. Tosfos extends it to ritzicha. He extends it to an act of murder. And then Tosfos further extends it that it would be a valid shechita to employ the laws of nature and to be considered eish mishum chitzav. It'll be considered my action, my chetz. Okay, that's Shitas Tosfos. The Ran in Sanhedrin disagrees with Tosfos, and the Ran says you can't apply what the Gemara says regarding monetary issues. You can't apply that to ritzicha, murder, and you can't apply that to shechita. The Ran says, "Lefikach ani oimer," based on all the difficulties that Tosfos is raising, the Ran says, "Ein ledamois nizkei mamin loritzeach leinyan chiyav misa." You cannot compare monetary law with the laws of murder when it comes to capital punishment, because loritzeach akel rachmana gabe. We see off the bat that you're not liable for murder if it was done unintentionally. You're not liable for murder if it occurred unintentionally. But when it comes to monetary damage, you are. The Torah says you're chayav al oynis gerotzen. Adam mu'ed la'olam. Person is always responsible, even if it was an oynis, even if it was a shoygig, even something beyond his control, or even something that is by accident, it was unintentional. You're liable for that. But when it comes to chayav misa, not. So obviously, says the Ran, you can't compare monetary law to an act of ritzicha. And then the Ran continues, ule'inin eish nami. So when we come to this novel concept of eish, that the Torah considers my employment of the laws of nature as my action, you can't draw this analogy between mammon, between monetary law, and between ritzicha. Avogadu ishim chitzavu, so says the Ran, true, we refer to the fire as your chetz, as your arrow, and true, your chayiv arba dvarim, your chayiv for four things. Nevertheless, says the Ran, loy mechayiv misa. You would not be liable for an act of murder. Elim kein nofal letoicha or v'kavshay sham, unless you physically hold the person down under the water, or you physically hold the person down in the fire. You don't let him escape the fire where you did a maisa, the avid maisa mamish. I highlighted those words. That you've performed an action, the ovid maisa mamish. You're only liable for murder if you did an actual maisa. This rule, this concept, eish mishum chetz, that the fire is considered my arrow, that's a concept in the world, in the monetary, in the laws of damage, in the world of damage. But when it comes to ritzicha or shechita, you can't compare. So that's how the Ran deal. You know why you're not liable for tying the person up before the sun comes? You know why you're not liable when it comes to the snake. You're not liable because you can't compare the concept of Eish Mishum Chitzav when it comes to murder. Tosfos argues. Tosfos was struggling each time along the way. Why don't we apply the laws of Eish when it comes to murder? It turns out now, that in item Yud Beis, I summed it up, there's a machloikis yesoidi. There's a fundamental argument between Tosfos and the Ram. If we can apply the concept of Eish Mishum Chitzav to Ritzicha, to murder, or to Shechita. Tosfos says Eish Mishum Chitzav is a universal concept. If you employ the laws of nature, it's attributed to you. Monetary law, Shechita, Ritzicha. The Ran says this is exclusive to monetary law. That it's a novel concept that you're liable for the indirect damage. But when it comes to Shechita, when it comes to murder, you can't compare Yoredeya to Choshen Mishpat, because Choshen Mishpat, you're chayiv even for unintentional acts. When it comes to Shechita, and it comes to Yoredeya, it comes to Ritzicha, Dine Nefashis, you can't compare. Now, there's a famous question that the Nemuke Yosef asks. This is a famous question. I'm sure you heard this question before. Nemuke Yosef asks, how are we allowed to light Shabbos candles on Friday? Right? The fire is going to go burning into Shabbos. Or perhaps you can ask the same question. How can I put food on the fire before Shabbos and have it cook on Shabbos? As long as you have a blech, you're allowed to put food up on the fire and it can cook through Shabbos. You want to have your chalent fresh and cooked Shabbos morning, Shabbos afternoon. So you put the crock pot up before Shabbos and it cooks through Shabbos until the next day. As long as there's a blech, as long as there's no concern that you're going to tamper with the fire, it's okay. Nobody questioned how are you allowed to put the food up before Shabbos, how are you allowed to light the candles before Shabbos? So asks the Nemuke Yosef. Nobody asked it before, but all of a sudden somebody's asking it. The Nemuke Yosef asks, if you'll ask, I kashilach, heichi sharinon im chashecha lahadlikas aneiris v'adlakasach lechas v'nigmeres b'Shabbos. How are you allowed to light the candles before Shabbos? The candles are burning into Shabbos. Ulefi zeh hare ku'ilu hiv'iru hu ba'atzmai b'Shabbos. Shouldn't we attribute the fire to you? And it's as if you're burning the wick down and you're burning up the oil on Shabbos. Isn't that effect attributed to you? Eish mishum chitzav. So the Nemuke Yosef is asking, we should apply the concept of Eish mishum chitzav to Shabbos. So the Nemuke Yosef answers, if you think deeply into this, it's not a question. Why? Because what does Eish Mishum Chitzav mean? Eish Mishum Chitzav means that if I light a fire, or if I put something in the path of a fire, so the effect, whatever ends up happening, I'm liable for, and it's as if I did it myself. True. But what's my connection to what ended up happening? My connection was the initial lighting of the fire that happened before. The Torah teaches us when you light the fire before, when you pull the trigger before, whatever ends up happening later is attributed to you. But your input was from before Shabbos. So says the Nemuke Yosef, it's true that you're going to be liable for whatever ends up happening. Let's read it inside because it's a fascinating Nemuke Yosef, the way he develops the concept. This is an item Yod Gimel in the Teretz, right after the bold words. The Teretz, the Nemuke Yosef answers, if we look deeply into the matter, it's not a question at all. My obligation, my liability, is because it's as if I shot an arrow. It's as if you threw an arrow. Let's talk about throwing an arrow. The moment you shoot the chetz, vis-a-vis you, as far as you're concerned, there's no backseas, there's no retracting what you did. You can't retract the arrow, you can't retract the bullet. Whatever ends up happening, it's as if it happened because of you from the very first moment. Whatever the bullet hits, whatever the arrow hits, you're responsible because you're the one who pulled the trigger. Whatever ends up happening was as if it happened before. However, we're not treating it as if you're continuously doing the action. Because if you would say that you're liable because of what happens later, then you are an inus. If I shoot the trigger, by the time the person gets hit by the bullet, I can't retract the bullet anymore. Even if I would have full regret, there's no way I can retract the bullet. So I'm not. You can't hold me responsible for what happens later on because it's too late. I can't bring it back. Why am I liable for the damage it causes? Because I'm the one who pulled the trigger before. So you're liable for whatever happens later because of what you did it before. So no one's going to say that you're violating Shabbos as the candles are burning, because it's true that whatever ends up happening is attributed to you, but you did it before Shabbos. You're not considered continuously lighting a fire on Shabbos. Your input was from before Shabbos. A simple answer. But what do you see from this Nemuki Yosef? You see from this Nemuki Yosef, if you look down at item Yud Daled, you see from the Nemuki Yosef that Eish Mishum Chitzav would apply to Shabbos also. The Nemuki Yosef went so far to ask the question that how can you light Shabbos candles before Shabbos because of Eish Mishum Chetz, because we should attribute the effect to you. So he answers, but my input occurred before Shabbos. But the concept is there, that Eish Mishum Chitzav would be considered a violation of Shabbos. Imagine if I would light the fire on Shabbos. So of course, you're not allowed to light a fire on Shabbos. But imagine if I would put something into motion on Shabbos, and then it would go ahead and cause damage. Then apparently the Nemuki Yosef would say that it's considered as if you violated Shabbos. The Nemuki Yosef is talking about where you lit the fire from before. However, imagine if I would put the stone on top of the roof on Shabbos and the wind would blow the stone off the roof on Shabbos and cause damage on Shabbos, that would be considered as if I violated the Shabbos. Eish Mishum Chitzav applies to Shabbos as well. So that's what we see from the Nemuki Yosef. So far we have Tosfos. Tosfos says that the concept of Eish Mishum Chitzav applies across the board. It applies to monetary damage. It applies to Ritzicha. The person could be held liable for an act of murder. And Eish Mishum Chitzav could apply to a Shechita. You could put a knife on the roof, wait till the winter come, it'll be a kosher Shechita. The only reason the Gemara says that it's not a kosher Shechita is because the Gemara was following Reish Lakish, that the fire is only considered your mammon. But if you would hold like Rabbi Yochanan, how we paskin, that the fire is considered your chetz, you would be liable, and it would be a shechita, even though you put the object on the roof before. The Ran says that Eish Mishum Chitzav applies exclusively to Dinei Mamonis. It does not apply to Shabbos. It does not apply to shechita. That's the Chiddush of the Ran. The Nemuki Yosef applies the concept of Eish Mishum Chitzav regards to Hilchas Shabbos. So let's continue talking about that. There's another interesting halacha when it comes to Shabbos. The Gemara says in Bava Kamma on Daf Samach, let's leave the Nemuki Yosef on the burner for a moment. Let's introduce one more concept. The Gemara in Bava Kamma says on Daf Samach, why are you liable for winnowing? How do they use the winnow? They take the grain, they thresh it. That means that they separated the chaff from the kernels. Then they toss the whole thing into the air, and the wind blows the chaff away, and the kernels, which are heavier, fall to the ground. So you're really employing the laws of wind, of nature. You're employing the wind. Sometimes you have artificial wind blowers, or maybe there are more modern machines today that can winnow. But in the old day, you would toss the pile of chaff and grain into the air, and you're simply relying on the laws of nature. You're relying on the laws of gravity and the wind. The wind will blow away the chaff, and the kernels will fall to the ground. And the Gemara says that's one of the 39 melachas, winnowing. Says the Gemara, why am I liable for winnowing? I didn't do it, the wind did it. Here's the concept. Zoyre v'ruach mesayatoi. If you winnow and the wind is what's helping you, so it says that you're liable for Shabbos. Says the Gemara, hamimili in Shabbos, the melachas machsheves asfertura. That's an exception for Shabbos because that's the way the melacha is done. When the Torah says you can't winnow, that's an exception. Because the Torah is considering that's the way to winnow. The way you winnow is by relying on the wind. That's the way you winnow. So, Malachas Machsheves Asotera. The Torah forbade any labor done in the normal way. So, for example, even Reish Lakish, who holds that the wind is not attributed to you, Reish Lakish holds that the Eish is only Mammon, he would also agree that you're liable for winnowing on Shabbos. He would consider the wind to be part of your action when it comes to Shabbos, because Shabbos is an exception. Shabbos, Malachas, Machsheves, Asra Torah, whatever the Torah forbade, if that's the normal way to do it, then you're liable. That's how the Rush explains the Gemara over there. So this is another concept when it comes to Shabbos, that if that's the normal way to do the Malacha, then you're liable anyway, without Eish, you're liable for Melechas Machsheves Asur Torah. Now, let's look at item Yud Zayin. There's a Ramah in Hilchas Yom Tov. The Ramah says in Hilchas Yom Tov that you're allowed to take a candle. Imagine if you have a candle or you have a torch or something, a lamp, like in the old days, a kerosene lamp, and you no longer have use for the lamp. You're allowed to put the lamp or the candle outside on Yom Tov. The fire is not Muksa. You can put it outside, and you can hope that a wind will eventually blow and extinguish the candle. That's considered gram kibui. You extinguish the candle indirectly, and on Yom Tov, gram kibui is permitted. That's what the Ramah paskins in Tavkuf Yudalot Hilchos Yom Tov. Mutar lahamid ner b'makom sheruach sholet. You're allowed to put a candle outside where it could possibly blow the wind in order to extinguish the candle, because gram kibui is mutar on Yom Tov. The Avnei Nezer brings from the Chelkas Yoyev, who asks the Kasha, and it ties into everything we've been discussing. First of all, let's just review. We have the concept of Eish Mishum Chitzav. We also have the concept that, even forget about the concept of Eish, you're liable for winnowing. Winnowing is an example where you're liable for the laws of nature. So asks the Chelkas Yoyev, how could the Ramah say that you're allowed to put the candle outside and allow the candle to be blown out by the wind? Asks the Avnei Nezer in the name of the Chelkas Yoyev, what about Eish Mishum Chitzav? You should be liable for what the wind does because of Eish. So he answers, the Avnei Nezer answers the question Gevaldik. He says, the Ramah holds like the Ran. Remember, the Ran did not extend the concept of Eish Mishum Chitzav to other areas of halacha. It's exclusive to Dinei Mamonis. It doesn't apply to Ritzicha. It doesn't apply to Shechita. It's exclusive to Dinei Mamonis. So perhaps the Ramah, who paskins that you're not responsible for the cause of the wind, that's because we don't apply the concept of Eish Mishum Chitzav to Hilchos Shabbos. We only apply it exclusively to Dinei Mamonis. We don't say Eish Mishum Chitzav regabi Ritzicha. So perhaps he would say that you don't say Eish Mishum Chitzav by Shabbos. But then he asks the second question. What about Melechas Machsheves? Why is putting the candle in the path of the wind different than winnowing? So answers the Avnei Nezer, based on the Rush, that's how we explain the concept of winnowing, because you're only liable for a melacha that was done by the wind if that's the way the melacha is normally done. Like the Gemara says, Zoira, winnowing, Beruach Mesayatoi, and the wind helps. That's the derech of the melacha. That's what the Rush says. So the Avnei Nezer uses the Rush. It's a combination. The Ramah holds you can put the candle in the path of the wind in order for the candle to be extinguished on Yom Tov. You're not liable for extinguishing because it's indirect. What happened to the concept of Eish Mishum Chitzav? Didn't we say that if you put something in the path of the wind or the path of the fire, it's as if you did it yourself? So that's the Avnei Nezer's question. The answer is that the Ramah holds like the Ran, that we don't apply that concept to Dinei, to other areas of halacha. It's exclusive to Mamonis. Why is putting the candle in the path of the wind different than winnowing? The answer is because winnowing is an exception, because the way to do the malacha is by employing the laws of nature. The Chazon Ish has other examples of that. The Chazon Ish says that if you look at the end of item Tes Zayin, the Chazon Ish in Baba Kama, the last line of paragraph Tes Zayin, the Chazon Ish in Baba Kama says that tzeda, trapping, how do you normally trap an animal? You don't trap the animal with your two bare hands. You put out a trap, you put out a net, and then the animal falls into the net. So that would be liable on Shabbos. We know that tzeda is one of the lamed tes balachas. So even if I put the trap out in the morning and the animal doesn't get caught until the afternoon, the Chazon Ish entertains that you should be liable because that's the way the malacha is done. Or cooking or baking. Why am I liable for cooking or baking? I didn't actually cook the food. I merely put the food on the fire. The answer is that's how it's normally done. So let's just summarize quickly. We have a concept of Eish Mishum Chitzav. There is such a concept that you're liable for employing the laws of nature. Tosfos says that applies to Mamonis, Ritzicha, and Shechita. It would apply to everything. And perhaps Tosfos would say it applies to Shabbos as well. The Ran says it only applies to Mamonis. It doesn't apply to other areas. We do have exceptions where it comes to Shabbos. there is such a thing as being liable for the wind, but that's because that's the normal way of doing the malacha. So when the Ramah says that you're allowed to put the candle in the path of an oncoming wind, the wind was not blowing at the time, but the wind could come later, that's because the Ramah holds, like the Ran, we don't apply Eish Mishum Chitzav to other areas, and the Ran also holds that winnowing is only when that's the normal way to do the malacha. The normal way to extinguish a candle is not to put the candle into the wind. The normal way is simply to snuff out the candle, to blow out the candle, snuff out the candle. Putting the candle in the wind is not the normal way of doing the malacha, so it would not be liable because of Eish Mishum Chitzav, and it would not be liable, it's not analogous to the malacha of Zoira, of winnowing. Other malachas perhaps would be, but this apparently is not. So that's basically a summary of the different concepts and how they interplay regarding Ritzicha and regarding Hilchas Shabbos. Yasha Koyach, everybody.